do the intro. To the reader.
For the whole reader?
Yeah, and he can banter with us.
So Corey should be in our banter?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because we do this section at the beginning. This is okay. Episode 5.
Episode 5 of the Eerie Listener, yeah.
We just, you know, what's in our mind, kind of.
Yeah, we just kind of, like, shoot the shit, kind of what happened this week. Kind of like how the opening of the Eerie show is.
Okay.
But, yeah, we
I'm Jay Stevens, by the way.
Yeah, and I'm John Linvey. We're joined by...
Corey Carr,
what do you do?
What do I do?
Why are you here?
Well,
where are we? What's happening? We sound different.
We are in the historic Warner Theater for the 10th annual Eerie Horror Film Festival and Expo.
Right.
I've been coming for the past, I think, 8 years consecutively. I heard about it late. The first one I didn't even know
existed.
Yeah, the second one, I'm like, oh, this is a thing that's happening? But since then, I've been trying to come every year. I try to watch as many of the films as possible.
Right, we're eating to your time right now.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I've got people.
You have your. Because you also do. Yeah. You're also a podcaster. You do, yes. Or actually not just podcaster. You're a horror review site, and you do podcasts and videos.
Yes.
YouTube videos. You're a YouTuber. Like, hey, YouTube.
A little. Yeah. We've been sort of getting away from that. So we've been doing more of the podcasts.
Right.
More. Consecutive, I suppose. More.
Right.
Insert word.
Yeah. But yeah, so what we do at the opening of the Eerie Listener is we kind of just cover a week, kind of what's been going on.
Yeah, what's in your mind.
What's in our mind. But the reason why we're here and why we're in the Warner is because right before this, we went ahead and did our interview for the show, which is with Greg Ropp and John, who organized the Horror Fest.
Yep.
And now we're going to talk about what's going on. So
it was
Jay.
It was good.
Yeah, it was a good interview. Greg's a talker.
Greg is a talker. He was a great interview. I get the feeling like if you let him go, you could do like a 6-hour marathon with him.
Probably.
Just throw keywords.
Later, he would probably think, why did those guys let me talk so much?
What's wrong with him?
Who does that?
We do that.
Right. That's exactly what we do.
We have no time constraints.
Well, we've been really lucky with everyone that we've had on the show.
Yeah.
Has just been, had these, all these great stories. I mean, like last week we had. God damn it! What's his name?
From Greg Gagne.
Greg Gagne,
the voice of the Seawolves.
And he had some great stories.
Yeah.
And Jay got to talk a lot of baseball, which that was out of my depth. Which is even with horror, like horror is not really a genre that I'm a huge fan of. Like there's,
same here.
Well, the thing
maybe we should just talk about horror movies.
Yeah,
part of it. I mean, I've got stuff in my mind, but screw it. Let's talk about horror.
Yeah. So what don't you like about horror? Because I'll say what I don't.
Okay. I was thinking about this last night. Because I'm like, okay, I'm going to come down and talk to these guys about a horror festival, right? And like, I don't. Let me do a background bit.
Okay.
I remember seeing a study of online dating sites, right? And they were. I know.
Okay. This is interesting. This is all right. What's going on, Jay?
So, and they were trying to find out what aspects of people's interests or hobbies that made you could forecast what made you compatible with someone else.
Okay.
And the only thing they could find, it wasn't like. Whether you liked a lot of sex or you smoked or whatever, the only thing that seemed
plausible
to determine that you could predict the outcome of a match was whether or not you like horror films. If two people liked or disliked horror films, they could date. But if you were on opposite sides of that question,
you could not date.
It would not work out.
That's wild.
So Corey, being a horror fan, have you had any girlfriends in the past that did not like horror films and it just didn't work out?
Well, no, it didn't not work out because of that.
Well, that's the thing. It's not causation.
Maybe it's
correlation.
Maybe it's correlation because maybe it's like the type of things they like or the content of what they consume.
Yeah. So I definitely had to pick and choose what I watched when they were around, that sort of thing.
That sucks, right?
Well, I mean, even recently, now that we're getting close to Halloween, some friends and I, weekly on Fridays, have been getting together to watch scary movies. And... I don't know if it was like a conscious decision, but it came up to me to pick the movies. And I know it's sort of a broad audience, so I try to pick things that aren't so graphic or whatever,
right.
But are still like classics or genuinely suspenseful and things. So
right.
It, I guess it all depends.
Yeah, what'd you pick?
This past week I picked House on the End of the Street, which is a newer film with Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
And... like, that one had some pretty good suspense, and it was more similar to an early 80s slasher before they got Supernatural, and the killer never died, and there was a twist ending and stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought they would like it, and they did.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what I like about horror films, is that the fact that it is so diverse. It's not all of it, it's not all Saw. Yeah, it's not all torture porn. It's
not
all
porn. I wouldn't care either.
Right, but because like I think because even you, I've gone over and watched some films with you, and I enjoy more things like They Live, you know, and those types of horror films where like they're not necessarily horrors first and foremost, but they're dealing with these like scary ideas, you know, like oh yeah, they're all aliens, like talking like you know. The body snatchers and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Like, on the surface, there are, you know, they're scary, there's a killer, or they're aliens or whatever. But the best ones are when there's subtext, so if you actually sit and watch it,
right,
you get more out of it.
Like, the last movie that I watched, and people don't tell me that this does not technically count as a horror film, but the one that, like, freaked me out the most is I watched Hard Candy.
Okay.
Because I walked into Hard Candy not really knowing what that film was, and then when you watch it, and it, you know, it deals with a lot of guys' fear, you know, like castration, and it's about, like, weird, it's like almost like rape stuff that's happening, too, and it's really just, like, this really, like, tense movie, because you're not sure who's hunting who.
Yeah, exactly, there's, like, a predator-prey thing.
Yeah, but it constantly flips around, and they just did a really good job of, like, building tension, and, like, that one just, like, freaked the shit out of me.
That might say a lot about you.
Right. I think, well, isn't that kind of what horror is? Like, the ones that really freak you out the most kind of helps describe kind of, it helps you kind of, like, put a word to your fear.
Yeah, yeah, beyond, like, the immediate suspense of things.
Right.
Yeah. But, like, as a horror fan, that's the type of thing that got me interested. Because as a kid, well, it didn't take much to scare me. Right. I've seen more horror movies. I'm a little desensitized to the scares. I predict, you know, the loud noises that make you jump and stuff.
Right.
So now I look for genuinely suspenseful, frightening, you know, and then I have to wade through a lot of crap to get it. But
I think I'm just really empathetic, too. Like, Greg, during the interview, mentioned how, like, the only time he's ever looked away from the screen. I mean, I looked away from the screen last night. Like, at the it was, like, again, for that cold turkey one, and he's, like, pulling his skin off because it's, like, flaking. I was like, oh, God. I can't look at this because I have eczema, and so like I've seen like I've actually had to like see my skin flake off. It's gross. Like, it doesn't feel good.
Well, like, I hate the violence, like gratuitous violence.
Right.
The suspense, I like. I really.
Right.
So I was thinking about this, you know, like, you know, not a big. I wouldn't. I'm like not. I would be in the not horror category if I was dating, right? But, you know, last night we watched Paranorman with my kids.
Oh, yeah. That's great. That's great.
And Coraline, really which well I think made. Is, like, definitely a horror movie.
And Paranorman is, like, it's using a lot of what, the tropes of horror.
Yeah.
Like, it's really heavily talking about horror. But in this, like, and it's also, like, that movie, like, it's a kid's movie, but they're, like, he, like, gets lost. You know, he's, like, alone. He's, like, fighting, and he's, like, getting attacked.
Well, it's about a little girl that's killed by her town.
Right, yeah, exactly. And it's doing, like, it's that's a kid's like, movie, and it's doing with these really, like, oh, this whole town killed this girl.
Yeah.
Like, that's normally, in, like, Disney films, like, people don't die, you know?
But, yeah, it does touch on so many classic horror things, ghosts and curses and zombies and, you know, all that stuff rolled into one. And it's done in a way that's fun for kids, but then also as an adult, you can watch it, you know, because I saw that and got a kick out of it.
Yeah. Right.
And I know if I had kids, we were just like, yeah, Paranorman, I'll go buy you the toys or whatever.
Yeah, it was great. And also, like, for example, the Japanese version of The Ring, you know.
Yeah,
right.
Watching that by myself, and like, when I turned it off, I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna die! 24 hours or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And that's that has very little violence, right? I mean, it's all suspense, really.
Yeah.
Right. Well, even, like, I saw the American version first, because it came, it was released in theaters, you know, and all that. And I saw it in the theater, and I think partly because I hadn't seen much like that in the past, but also compared to, like, a slasher movie where there's a guy with a knife, whatever, I might be a lunatic for saying it, but that's not, like, if one of those guys came into my house, I'd probably try to fight him off.
Right.
But, like, a little girl creepily crawling out of the television, like, I don't know where to begin, what do I do?
How do I handle this?
Yeah, this is beyond anything I'm prepared for.
Yeah.
That's awesome, yeah.
So what about I remember as a kid, I had a neighbor, we were good friends, but he loved, like, the, violent, the porn, the you know, like, it was just
the
Halloween.
Not even, worse. Like, he would find these, like, back store videos of,
like in the 80s and stuff?
Yeah, being tortured in the Amazon jungle.
Oh, yes.
What was that called? Like,
Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Stuff like that, yeah.
And he would be like, oh, you gotta watch this. And I turn, I just like, even though it looked fake, I'm just like, I can't do this, man.
Like, what are you trying to do to me?
Yeah. I left. I remember leaving his house.
Yeah, I can't watch that stuff.
Well, like, that movie was supposed to be like real, like a documentary. But that is something that's happened with horror movies to make them more real. You know, when there is gore, they try to make the gore more real. And then now you have like this subsect of horror fans that really focus in on that.
Yeah.
And some of them get towards like snuff films, and that's beyond anything that I care to do. That's too real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm sure it happens, even though it's all of them seem to be like urban legend type, you know, stories that they snuff films exist. But I'm sure they do, because the world's big enough, it happens somewhere. But yeah, that's too real for me. And even like a lot of movies, if that's what they focus on, like not even like the torture porn Saws, but there are some movies that are just for guts and stuff. Well, that's fine. And if they look real, that's neat. So they put a lot of hard work into it.
Yeah.
But there's not much going on, and now I don't really care.
Right.
All that hard work
There's some of that cerebral content that like really sticks with
you. Yeah.
Because I think like that's just like good film, right? Good films are the ones that you can sit there and ponder about for the next day, or you walk out of the theater and you're just like, instead of talking about kind of what you like, what you didn't like, you're just like, what? Yeah. What did I watch?
Yeah.
What, like, you know?
Images. But also, you know, I'm also a writer, but the idea of like how you set up your scenes and create tension, and how you relieve it, how you know, how you create fear. I mean, that's really fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Like with The Ring, I still have that visual of, you know, the cover being placed over the well, and then she figures out what the ring is. You know, there's that bit of sunlight around it, but it's from the point of view of the girl at the bottom of the well, and it's so terrifying, right? Because you suddenly you're empathetic to this girl,
right?
Like, I just cannot, like, I still can't get that image in my head.
Yeah.
The idea of sitting at the bottom of the well and seeing the cover.
Yeah, seeing, yeah, it slide into place
and
blackness. Yeah, even to make films scary, like, music plays a large part. And I know John Carpenter, he's done a lot of his own music. He's probably saves a lot of money doing that too, when he makes But like Halloween, it's like one of the more iconic themes. Also Psycho.
Yeah.
And that's something that I find interesting too, and I always look for in a good horror movie, where like the theme from Halloween, it's sort of like a heartbeat, and it sets the tempo for Michael Myers chasing after teenagers. But then also in Psycho, the violins
the shower scene.
The shower scene.
Yeah.
It's sort of, because in that movie you don't see the knife going in.
Right.
You see it move, and then there's a little bit of blood that goes down the drain in the shower.
Chocolate
but you don't actually see anything. Yeah, chocolate syrup. Right. And but the sound of the violins sort of gives you a mental it fills in what you're not seeing.
But also it leaves more for your mind, because like the thing is like our imaginations can come up with way more horrible things than anything they could actually see. You know, especially when like if you give people just enough and allow them to connect the dots.
Yeah.
Then not only are you're like participating in a weird way.
Yeah.
You know, like you're in your own mind imagining what it would be like to stab somebody.
Yeah.
Which that's like way more scary and messed up than if someone showed someone getting stabbed. I'm just like, oh, that's terrible.
But except, I like violence when it's for a purpose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Saving Private Ryan didn't bother me. That's incredibly gruesome, right?
Right.
But I feel like the reason for that is to share the experience of war with people who will never get to battle,
And by doing so, you sort of understand and appreciate what those
mean. Exactly.
The sacrifice, right. Yeah.
And it works, you know, in some movies, if you save it or this brief moment, like building up to it, feels.
I think I hate the most about horror films, and this is probably just like this.
Here we are talking about the shit we hate about.
Well, this is something where it's like in horror films sometimes I guess it's such a long-standing trope that in the horror films like only like the deviants get it. You know, like the ones that are bad. Like that's like an old school trope. But when I do watch horror films, like. In the say the person who had nothing to do with the story, just like innocent,
a friend of the main
when innocent bystanders just die, get like murdered for no reason. Like what the hell? The dude's just like working in his office. Not only is he getting killed, but he's getting killed in one of the worst ways. Probably because like in their contract, like they're like the main actors or actors like I'm not gonna die that way. Like that's not cool. And so they find like these third bit extra characters that die in gruesome ways.
In the late 90s movie, I Know What You Did Last Summer, there were a couple of those kills where they were just superfluous characters got murdered, and you think, why? What did they have to do with it? But it was just because the film wasn't long enough, And for a slasher movie, there weren't enough of those kills. So they're like, well, okay, we'll reshoot a few scenes and stick them in. And now there's, right. You know, but yeah, there's no point.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But I mean, I guess like those are the parts. But I mean, I think generally like, I don't like, it's not that I don't like horror films, I just don't like kind of like the really popular genres right now. Yeah. Like, I almost wish that I was able to like exist when like those 80s horrors or the 70s horrors when those first started, because those seemed way more cerebral.
Yeah,
and way more of like actual films. Like they were more about the film, like the cinematography as well as, you know, like, yeah. I wish I was alive when The Shining came out.
Right.
You know?
I was alive during The Shining came out.
Right, but like I wish I had the opportunity to go see that in the theater the way it was meant to be seen. Whereas like, now, if I want to go see a horror film, I have things like Saw,
Netflix, and
or when I go to the theaters, it's like, you know, it's like The Possession and these like jump scares or Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, it's like painting by numbers, which
right, it's so formulaic. Where it's just like, and that's also like the formula that I don't want to prescribe to.
I like the pre-war German horror films,
right? Yeah,
Nosferatu.
Exactly, the
expressionist.
Yeah,
yeah, where all the sets were really wild and
totally. They filmed on location in like ancient German towns, right? With
the
sculptures and stuff.
Even the American Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein from the 30s had expressionist elements in some of their sets and things.
Yeah,
right.
So, but one thing I kind of touched on earlier is like non-horror fans. Don't really, I don't know, you mentioned horror, and they're like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's because they're so diverse. Like, here at the Horror Fest, there are horror comedies, and if you just say, oh, it's a horror movie, and here's the name of it, and whatever, and that person who doesn't dig horror movies is like, oh, even though they're going to have a blast watching that particular one.
Right. It's like Cabin in the Woods, you know, things like that, where it's like, that's like, anyone can watch Cabin in the Woods.
Right. You don't have to take them all so seriously, they're not all blood and guts.
Yeah.
And I think if more people were willing to try to watch them, because some people just
write it off, right?
Yeah. No, that's not happening. There's a lot to enjoy, and as a horror fan, I mean, you really start to notice some of them are for fun, and some of them, whether it's typical killer slasher,
right?
You know, some of them are parodying themselves, like we see in the 90s with like Scream and stuff.
Yeah,
they recognize how formulaic they are, so they, you know, write some things.
Yeah,
I'll be right back. Type of thing, you know, and or it's just half comedy, well, like Shaun of the Dead or something.
Yeah.
Like that's sure it's a horror movie, but it's way so much fun. It's not really scary, you know. And then, you get into the world of it's so bad, it's good.
Right, yes.
I like those ones, too. Yeah. I'm a big fan of those so bad, it's good.
Of course, probably the most well-known it's so bad, it's good is Troll 2.
Right.
That's, like, all over the internet. And there's even a documentary about it. Best Worst Movie. They're like,
right,
find all the people that were in all the stars and stuff and see what they're doing now, because it's pretty much everyone who was in that movie, that was the only movie they were ever in.
That's funny.
But yeah, there is a lot to like in horror. If you're, I don't know,
I think it's really cool. I just think it's really cool that the Erie Horror Fest is in the Warner. You can come here and watch films on the Warner, because like last night, like Christina and I were sitting here watching, and I was like, man, it's so awesome just to watch films in here. Like, I almost wish like the Erie Film, like the Erie Museum, the film Museum series did it here, because it'd be way cooler.
And the thing is too, Greg was telling us the last movie they showed here was Star Wars way back when.
'79.
No shit, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The first film that was shown here since was part of this festival a few years back when they moved here. So it really says something about what he's doing.
It's on a real silver screen.
It's authentic. It's awesome.
With the new chairs and everything, it's comfortable as hell.
And what's really interesting, too, is okay, you have these old Hollywood big budget films that were shown on the screen. Decades later now, the Erie Horror Film Festival is using that same screen to show indie horror films.
Right.
Or some of them are sci-fi and this and that. But, you know, it sort of suggests the future of film.
I mean, it's also this is one of the last few remaining standing Warner theaters across the country.
Yeah. It's just really fun to think about, you know, guys who are maybe film students or whatever, making films, they submit them here, and now they're on one of these screens that were originally used, you know, I mean, it's from the 30s. It's, I don't know, it's just really interesting to think about.
I love the experience of going out and seeing a movie in a theater. My kids don't. It's funny. I mean, they grew up watching, you know, I grew up before VHS, you know.
Right.
I saw Star Wars on a big screen like this, you know, waiting in line, you know, like for an hour or whatever.
Yeah.
In the theater.
Right.
But I love the experience of going out and, like, seeing a place like the Warren. I love going, you know, and we lived in San Francisco for a while. I'd go to the Castro Theater.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Inside, it's a lot like this, and they have film festivals all the time. Crazy, but, you know, it's the gayest section of America. So you can imagine some of the festivals they have there. But I just love the experience, and I feel like, I don't know, I wish we had a bit of a revival of that.
Yeah.
In Erie. Yeah.
Right.
You know, other cities have their little...
Well, yeah, because that's like the big one, the big company that's doing that now is like the Alamo Draft House, which I actually think that we... I think either one of the theaters in the Castro or in the Mission is actually getting converted into an Alamo Draft House.
Oh, okay.
Which, an Alamo Draft House, for those that aren't, like, familiar, they're, like, they serve beer and you can bring your own food, and it's, like, they show... They like, kind of curate their own movies they show, but they treat it like a real theater, and it's...
I would love to run one of those places.
Well, it's like... In the West Street Plaza, you know, there's a theater there.
There is a theater.
And pull out all the chairs, throw a bunch of couches in there.
Why did that place fail?
That's something that I would love to find out about, because, like, there was so many theaters. We had a drive-in. We had two theaters.
We had two theaters just near that plaza. One in it.
Right.
And then there was one behind where Big Lots.
Right. Right behind where Big Lots was. Then we had the Dollar Theater, which was actually a real theater for a long time. And then Tinseltown came in.
There was one on Buffalo Road.
Right. Yeah.
And then everywhere.
They were.
We had one.
And then we had the drive-ins. The drive-in theater right on Presque Isle, which was an awesome little location. And I remember going to see films there.
Why would you drive to Tinseltown? I mean, Tinseltown is, you know, whatever it is,
It's big.
It's big, but it's a pain to get to, right?
Yeah. Right.
It's not easy from any place.
But ever since Tinseltown came in, all the other ones just...
That's bizarre.
Went bankrupt.
You show Twilight enough in a place, so...
I mean, it's a super drag to me. It is really exciting. I mean, that's why it's really exciting, the fact that, you know, the Erie Art Museum is doing their film series. And even up at Tinseltown now, every Wednesday they do, like, a classic film showing and stuff like that. But I would love for more things, just more films.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, like, especially with the Erie Horror Fest, that there is, like, a lot of indie films. And potentially local filmmakers could get into, like, students from stuff like that. They have a whole student day, which is on Sunday.
Yeah.
And then they're planning another film festival, like, just a totally independent international film festival for later in the year. But yeah, I mean, that's the stuff that I love. Cause I love watching movies. I watch movies almost every day. I watch a film.
And one of the things about the indie films, even like the shorts,
right?
They're really interesting ideas that maybe you couldn't sustain a 30-minute running time, being that it's like an indie film. You know, it's hard for them to raise money and things, but there are, especially if it's kind of like a way out idea, but it's really interesting. No one's going to put up money necessarily to make it, and
right.
That's what's so much fun, checking out a place like this, or maybe other film festivals, because it's genuine ideas, and some of them are really interesting, and I just get such a kick out of being here. That's what I mentioned earlier, that the whole film fest kind of inspired us to do Slaughter Film, where we talked about movies, because we would come here and, you know, spend the day watching movies, then we'd go back to one of our apartments and just have a few beers and joke around and talk about the movies.
Yeah.
And then it was like, well, why don't we just do this?
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, let's just, like, sit around and talk about movies and be really casual and fun. And people are like that, right? And luckily, so far, they have, so.
Yeah. Right.
That's cool. It's, you know, it's interesting. I suspect a lot of these movies will ever be shown in any other place. I mean, how do they get distributed? How do people see them?
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. I think a lot of them, at least the shorts, they are film students, that sort of thing. It's making them and submitting them to film festivals is a way to get their name out there.
Yeah.
And especially if it wins, like, you know, the best feature or best whatever, it looks good on a resume.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of the features have been released later on, like the following year or whatever. There have been times when I've gone even to Walmart. I'm like, ooh, I remember that one.
Yeah,
well, that was pretty good.
Yeah, that's the thing. The Erie Horror Fest isn't, like, there's so many of these, like, smaller horror film fests, like, all around the country.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they tour. Like, they apply to all the whole circuit, and they run the circuit. And, like, eventually the goal is, like, if it's good enough, they get enough recognition, then when they apply to things like Sundance, they have, like, the credentials or, like... Because I'm sure, like, Sundance, they get so many submissions. I'm sure they look for, okay, where else is this shown? What awards has this won?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure if it has won awards and has shown a lot of places, that goes...
That helps it out.
Yeah, they put that maybe
into a different
pile,
into a different pile, where maybe we'll actually watch these ones.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
So,
because a good example,
South by Southwest is another big one that did that stuff as well.
A good example of that is Gesture Tracking, which is the last film that's going to show tomorrow, a documentary about VHS collectors,
and that's made by people from here.
People right here. We've interviewed them in the past, and they didn't set out to make a documentary. They kind of went to New York for their own YouTube channel. Filmed their own VHS hunts and stuff. And being in New York, they ran into a few people who make films. One of them was the former editor of Fangoria magazine.
Yeah.
And Lloyd Kaufman from Troma. And so somehow, just by being there, they, through some circumstance, ended up getting these people in front of their camera. And they thought, well, maybe now that we have this footage, we should do more with it. And they turned it into a documentary. But that's what they did over the past however many months. They sort of toured the states with it.
Yeah, they've been touring it constantly. Either them being there themselves or just having him sourcing it. They've showed it in San Francisco. They've showed it all over the place.
All over.
It's really cool. And the fact that that's a piece of Erie, a product of Erie going out and going around the country. Which, I mean, the thing is, I guess it's superfluous mentioning it, but I don't know, I feel like it's empowering to people to understand that, no, shit, you can make shit in Erie get it out there.
Well, that's the thing, too, Erie is kind of a weird place.
Totally weird, yeah.
No arguments here, man.
I don't know, a large portion of our population is, older, retired people, but then I think all of, from, Greg's age younger, there's quite a few of us that are kind of odd, and we sort of get it, and we're, I don't know, offbeat and strange. So something like that, a documentary about collecting VHS tapes, doesn't really surprise me that it was made here.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that it's getting as much attention as it is. And,
right.
Because I've seen, they throw up on their Facebook, oh, it's showing here, for anyone who's maybe in that area, CZN is also following on their Facebook or whatever, they can check it out. But then, the responses, oh, it was great, stuff like that. I'm happy for them just because, we're in that same area. We're in that same pool,
Right, yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
And also, this is kind of off topic, but the theater in the West Street Plaza, going back to what Greg was saying about inclusive and exclusive, a guy I know used to own a movie rental place. And it slowly died, they have been. And it was his idea to turn that into a dinner theater where he would show older movies weekly. And, the lobby would still be his movie rental place.
Yeah.
And I guess the guy who owns it wouldn't come down on the price. So now he's, inclusive. Yeah. You could have this guy take up, a portion of your plaza and turn it into a money-generating business. But instead, because he wanted them to come down on the rent, but he wouldn't. So instead, it's going to sit vacant. You're not going to make any money, and you're going to pay tax on it. So
they're going to. I guarantee that whole plaza is going to get torn down. They're going to put all those there. I guarantee it.
Well, from what I understand, the owner, he's slowly kicking his tenants out. He wants to renovate the whole thing. In the end, if he does tear it down, I don't know. But I guess that's the goal.
Going to tear it down for a Walmart there. I know it.
It'd be terrible right there.
It would be.
No, man, it's for all those, it's all for that, that's those little, that Lower West Side.
I know, it's such a great little neighborhood, and then you would throw a Walmart
there. Do it.
Yeah. I mean, the OLC's right next, pretty much next door. There's all these kids. It just would be a traffic snarl.
It kind of is in the afternoon.
It would be great, because it's in, within walking distance, or biking distance of a lot of people.
I want
to turn it into
a theater, what it was
that
built to be.
That whole could be cool,
And even, because the Horror Fest got started at the Roadhouse, and then it graduated to the Playhouse. Now the Warner, the Roadhouse was sold, it became a church for a while, and then I think it's for sale again. And that was cool because you could have, he mentioned, in order to show movies here, it's $1,000 a day because the electricity and the people that you'd have to work the front or whatever, security and stuff. And but small as the Roadhouse is, you could have little movie events and things.
Right.
People have done it in the past, and it's usually sold out, it holds 200 people. But now without it, where do you go?
Yeah.
The Playhouse is too big, and, I don't know if they would care anyway, but, it's where else would you have something like that? Fortunately, we have the the art museum, they're kind of doing something similar.
Yeah, because their little viewing area isn't massive, but it's big enough where you can hold, yeah. I think, maybe 100 people.
It's not the greatest theater, but it's a great building.
It's a cool little place, but like I don't know, like those, because it's also like plastic chairs. It's not like the nice.
it's not the comfiest place. But
right. I do appreciate that it's still an art museum. Yeah. It really ties film into
Right. Yeah. It definitely is cool. Don't get me wrong. I think it's awesome that they're doing it.
I wouldn't call it a cool movie theater, right?
Right.
But it's a neat space and
it's
kind of like that's a thing, you know. Like when we talk, I don't know, we can dovetail on the infrastructure, but you build a nice place to inhabit.
It's also like they would do the film series at Frontier over the summer. I don't. Did they still do that? Did they?
I don't think
they
do.
Because I remember the two years that they had it running for a while, and I used to go, and it was cool to sit. Like, get on a beautiful night, sit on the grass
in the amphitheater. They have it down there, right?
When I went and saw it, it wasn't even in the amphitheater. It was like on the eighth Street side.
Yeah, they show like family movies.
Family movies, and it was like, and they showed it like not know where that like pond is, but it's to the left of that pond. On the 8th Street side, they put up a big screen, and you would sit, like, they'd go up the hill, so you could sit up on the hill, and you went where people blocking your vision.
Yeah. I think they still do that. Like, on Thursdays, you know, June, July, or something like
that. But it was awesome, because, like I said, and I remember going there with my sister was still in town, we'd just go there and get, like, take a case of beer, six-pack of beer, just sit out on a blanket, and watch a film on a beautiful, gorgeous, you know, July night in Erie, PA. It was awesome. But no, I definitely think we need to, like, I would want more theaters. And actually, like, the thing is, like, I want to see, like, a film festival get so big where it's, like, takes over downtown where they're showing films here, they're showing films at the Warner, they're showing films at the Erie Art Museum. Yeah. And, like, you have, like, because there's also, because there are a lot of film fests now. There's the Badass Film Fest.
Yeah.
There's the Erie Horror Fest. There's this international they're planning on doing now. I don't necessarily want to say all these happen on the same weekend, but it would be really cool to see, like, if Edinburgh or the local colleges got involved, too. And so they're renting the Playhouse while the Erie Horror Fest is going on.
Just make it happen.
No, the roar on the shore takes up all that time, the prime time.
I think it's, you know, the roar on the shore is not my crowd, but you know, when you see the downtown totally stacked,
it's cool. It's awesome. Yeah. You know what I mean? I just want more of that.
Publishers hate it. They want
to. Right.
Yeah. They keep, Jay, why don't you write something about the roar on the shore? I'm like,
what's there to write?
I just avoid town. That means.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, awesome.
Well, I know the guys from the Badass Film Festival.
They're here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, they had The Gauntlet.
Yeah, you did that, right.
Like 14 hours straight of movies. They want to do more little events like that in the future, like every few months and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I would like to do, too, maybe with Slaughter Film, if I could. I haven't thought too much about like what we would show or whatever.
Right.
The idea is to build like a local fan base and just try to get people. Again, like our show is just kind of hanging out and chit chat and you know very casual. I would love to get people to do that. You know, all sit in a room and check out this movie for whatever you know theme or whatever. And again, like the Roadhouse would have been perfect. I don't know
where to get all the film equipment and stuff like to have a theater. I mean, what would you?
I might have to rent something, but again, depending on the location, I mean, it just might have that already.
Yeah, go to the colleges, like they have rooms dedicated to that stuff.
I even thought of my only reservation is I don't know what kind of turnout there would be. Is talking to the people who own, I forget the name of it, the Waterford Drive-In. Because they're only open Saturday and Sunday, I think, or maybe Friday, too. So that would be cool. Watch some old drive-in-type movie at a drive-in.
Right. Some Grindhouse.
Something like kind of crazy, you know, Slaughter Film Presents and whatever. And maybe, you know, a portion of the money can just get donated to whatever, you know, too.
Right.
But I want to make that happen. That's the thing. Like, I don't know how I can make it happen or, you know. But that would be awesome.
And I think that's one of the toughest things like with Erie is that there are a lot of these great ideas, but there's not enough infrastructure or incubators or things like that to help people who have the motivation or the energy to then get in contact with the people who have the resources and the ability to like help nurture these things happen. I mean, we do have some incubators, but I feel like they're a lot more focused on things like insurance.
Entrepreneurship.
Right.
Yeah, whatever that means.
Right. Right. But nothing that's more focused and more dedicated to the arts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like that idea in particular, like, I don't want to make any money. I just want to have it happen.
Yeah.
There's that theory that drawing the creative class to your urban area will improve the area, right?
Yeah.
Right. Businesses and people.
Right.
I mean, that's what...
got mouths to feed, right? You know what I mean? People come downtown to watch a movie. They got to go eat somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You probably.
We're all going to come down and see this cool play, and then, you know, there's a theater festival here.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, festival
there.
But a lot of that stuff's, like, really, like... Because if you think about, like, what's downtown, I mean, there is, like... And the thing is, like, the great infrastructure to upkeep. I mean, you have so many different great places to eat. You have the bars with the good food.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So all they need is just more reasons for people to be downtown.
Yeah,
if you're showing, could you just picture that? Like, if they were showing films here at the Warner
all the time,
like every night, you could come here to catch a flick.
Yeah,
you know, and even if they picked like older films or things that were like, underneath like in public domain where they didn't have to pay the super amount of money to get it out, but they charged, you know, like $6-8 a ticket, and then I could walk down the block and go to Jekyll and Hyde's and get a pint and a sandwich afterwards. Like that's a perfect date for me and my that's a date for my wife and I. And it's also not something that's crazy expensive. It's not like going to see a play or going to something.
I'd love to see Ben-Hur on the screen.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, yeah, some of those, like, old epic movies would be terrific, right?
There's
like Lawrence of Arabia.
It's a lot different seeing it on the big screen.
Yeah.
Or even, like, and again, seeing it here with the history that the Warner has,
right?
You know, watching a whole movie in this old theater, you know.
It was like, put this goddamn place to work, you know what I mean?
It's just the convention center building. Right.
I believe so, yeah. At least that's what that door says now that I'm looking at it. It's so weird because I've been able to watch people like walk by. I've seen at least four pairs of pajama pants. On a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
I'm getting,
actually,
I'm sad now.
It was fun recording here last night because we had like the lights on. It was like soft mood lighting. And we didn't close the windows entirely, so like people were walking by.
Who the fuck are these assholes
or something over here? There's a lot of people
filing
out.
The new rink. Yeah.
Explosion time, or I guess still otter time, right?
It's otter time.
Otter time.
Well, awesome. Well, I guess we should just go into the interview now.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Thanks, Corey.
Okay.
Thanks, Corey. Thanks for hanging out.
I think I'm having a nerd moment. Said, we started the interview with a nerd moment.
Meg was halfway, kind of rock and roll. So what exactly are you guys looking at right now? What is this?
Cricket magazine. These were, back in the day, Warren magazines. Put out Vampirella, Creepy and Eerie, and most importantly, Famous Monsters of Filmland. And if you know anything, you ever heard of Famous Monsters of Filmland?
I think my dad was a comic book collector, and so I think I've actually seen these up in the attic.
The people who grew up with these magazines were actually dubbed Monster Kids. Actually, we want to talk about this?
Yeah, we're going. We're going.
Hey, NSA, what's up? Thanks for telling me that we recorded. No, it's all good. So back in the day, and I would like this in there, because this is why we're here. Back in the day, Warren Magazine put out all these really cool things. As a matter of fact, in the back one of these, it's probably Famous Monsters to show everything else. So it's really funny. I bring those magazines up to people sometimes, and they're just like, Famous Monsters of Filmland, that sounds like a stupid magazine. I was like, well, go tell it to Steven Spielberg, Dante, John Landis, I think Francis Ford Coppola, Roger Corman, Vincent Price.
Even a lot of the actors.
That's what I mean, Vincent Price. And I mean, there's people whose careers were just completely altered with this magazine. It was aimed at like 10-year-old kids back in the 60s. And I mean, all the ads back there, every one of us ordered from those things, all those monster kids. And here's the cool part. What's funny, we had the last laugh too, because people used to say, oh, throw that trash away. What's that going to be? Well, they were influenced almost every director you've ever heard of. And these things are now so collectible, they're worth a fortune.
Wow.
And I sold all my famous monsters in the late 80s, early 90s for a pretty good price. But now if I had them, I could probably buy a small house, actually. But that is a true story. That's a true story. So some issues are worth, you know, several hundred, if not thousands of dollars.
These...
$20-$30 probably.
And a guy that created Famous Monsters, Forrest J. Ackerman, who passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah, gotta listen.
Yeah, he's what it pretty much started the whole film conventions and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
He started, I think, doing sci-fi and horror.
If I may, I mean, that's one thing I wanted to bring up, segue into this.
Right.
Was there's an issue. I can't even tell you what number it was. Famous Monsters number 120 has a significance for fans if they're really horror nuts out there, if they're even interested in this. That was the first issue I actually recall seeing an ad for the first convention. I didn't know what a convention was. I had to ask my dad this big word. And I was 11. I would have been 11 in 75. So it was really weird to see this thing in the back, and it was like a picture, I think, of Christopher. I remember the poster of Christopher Lee and some dinosaur and Peter Cushing's face.
Oh, yeah, I'm a real.
Like, oh my God, I gotta go see this, you know? And it's in this place called New York City, and I was in Michigan at the time, and I was like, Mom and Dad, we can drive there, right?
No.
So what's really weird, all these years later, I still go back to that issue, which I still have in my house. It's right next to my bed. And I go back to this is where this all started from. I mean, I was 11 years old. I can pinpoint the issue, the time, the date, exactly when the Horror Fest started. And that started in 1975, by the way.
That's awesome.
And what's really crazy is I'm in that issue. So when I was a kid, the kids, all these monsters, they called them monster kids. If you made it in the famous Monsters of Filmland, it was the ultimate nerdy, cool thing. We didn't have the internet or the web. We didn't have the self-gratifying. You had to send a letter. You had to write a letter. And
you had to earn it, right?
Exactly. But this editor, this guy named Forrest J. Ackerman, is the reason we're all sitting here today. And Forrest J. Ackerman, if you had Steven Spielberg for real sitting right across me right now, he would cite Forrest J. Ackerman, not any other filmmaker or anything. He would say, that is what got me into filmmaking. But, you know, all these other directors influenced me, blah, blah, blah. But, if I may, so issue 120, folks, it's got Greg Rock in it. It says, wanted more readers like Greg Rock. Here's my 10-year-old picture, you know. And, man, I must have worn out that issue in school. People were like, I can't believe this is a famous monster. So, but I ended up being a famous monster three times. I was actually I had a letter printed in 174, and I can't believe it. I mean, I haven't woke up, so this is like a free fly. I feel like Jack Kerouac. You know? Greg coming to Jack Kerouac, but trust me, there was enough booze flowing in my apartment last night. Everybody, well, did I go home? Where am I at? Why are you in my room? I can tell you right now that that was a pretty cool thing. So years later, I forget what other issue it's in 157. I actually made it as Monster of the Month.
Oh wow,
that was it. That was, you know, I was gonna get laid somehow, you know? But it never happened because of that. Trust me. But years later, after I started going to conventions, lo and behold, who is at the convention but a very old Forrest J. Ackerman, who I got to spend some time with several times, actually.
Oh, I was going to ask you if you actually had a chance to meet him.
Absolutely. So I got Famous Monsters of Finland, you know, issues that are autographed and stuff. But he's the reason we're sitting here. And honestly, you know, I was thinking about that last night. I was like, you know, so many people just don't give thanks to, you know, they don't really look back at what started their interest in music or movies or writing or doing, you know, publishing. And I'm sure we all have stories. I mean, there's probably somewhere you say, I would like to do a magazine. I'd like to do film. I'd like to do film reviews. I'd like to, you know.
Right.
Not, so
exactly. I actually had a similar opportunity where I got to meet, like, one of the people that helped inspire me to start doing the podcasting thing.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's one of those, like, shaky moments. You're like, I really like you.
Exactly. And it's funny. I just had a person ask me yesterday. They said, you know, this is a pretty cool thing you have going on here. Does it ever get, like... Is it weird, you know, me and these people, you've grown up appreciating their work and stuff? I just laughed. I said, no. And then John knows this, too. I think it's probably happening to you as well. You know, you go to the airport, you pick up these people, and all of a sudden you realize, I know, I'm probably ripped the hell out of this magazine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know, I got it, man. It's morning, but I'm okay. You know, I only destroyed about 18 of these things in the past. But anyway, you know, that's the weird thing. You meet people that you're fans of,
right?
And then you meet people that you have been influenced by,
right?
And it's a completely different thing. So I told this young man yesterday when he asked me, I said, you know, it's cool when you leave here and you realize, all right, now it's almost like notches in a gun barrel. And I was like, okay, I met this person, this kid. And after a while, it really becomes a blur, and you are working with these people, and you just, you know, and then you get to know these people, and they're all normal, everyday people.
Yeah. So I always like to say there's like this interesting point where when you meet someone that you're a fan of, it's like there's this, like, this giddiness. But
absolutely.
But then once you get past them as like just this thing that's untouchable, and you realize that they're just a human being, and then you can just admire them for what
absolutely.
They do. Yeah,
exactly.
Right. The conversation changes.
And a
yeah.
personal connection. But when you meet somebody that's influenced you, like say with a podcast, and different things. I mean, it's a whole different thing. So, I mean, that is something I still love, having that experience.
Right.
And but there's only probably a handful of people left that I could even say. Man, like, I'd be like, oh my God. Like, what would you, you know, I think we brought this up in our podcast too, last time. What would you say to Paul McCartney?
Yeah, right.
I mean, Paul McCartney sitting across me, you know, love him or hate him, it's like, there's history sitting there before. Yeah, I would be like, hi, Paul. Yeah, like, yeah, you made a couple of good songs. Thanks. Yeah, you changed the world. Yeah. And what do I say? You know, Roger Waters, Pink Floyd, and most of my people I like to meet are musicians, which is weird. You know,
right? Yeah.
Well, you're talking about that. I remember seeing on Howard Stern. He had Ozzy Osbourne on, and he brought in Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
And Ozzy was just about in tears meeting Paul McCartney.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
He could have also been very drunk.
Well, yeah.
Sharon, you look so different.
Maybe because he's talking kind of odd and
exactly. Yeah.
It's kind of funny how you said, you know, as a kid, famous monsters and stuff sort of got you, if you weren't already into monsters, and that helped you make the horror fest. Mm-hmm. You know, as a kid, I started to get interested in horror movies and stuff, but only because of the horror fest did my friends and I, Forrest, decide to do Slaughter Film.
It's amazing.
So it's like, before we even really met, just coming here, we already had like this relationship, sharing the same interests and stuff. So
right, well, it's really awesome how like even in Erie, there's like those pieces of culture, like these events that are very cultural based, and it's on not just like pop culture, but like different subcultures, you know. And then
no doubt,
you can
very diverse.
Yeah, you can have that, but which is usually something that's usually relegated to to like much larger cities and like the much bigger events.
I agree.
But, like even in like small towns, yeah. Like things like this can happen.
Right, and that's interesting. Right up into this, if I may, something you just said too. Something happened to me yesterday. Has not happened to me in a long time. And it was a really cool personal validation that what we're doing is correct. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's really weird. And every promoter, I think, goes through that. You know, am I doing the right thing? And you know, and you know, sometimes you bring guests in that don't make a whole lot of money. And then you have guests that just, like Vernon Wells, that just fans love him and they just want to see him every year. And we might as well just give him a bed here. And you know. But I was walking down the street yesterday, going back to my hotel, and hectic day, get everything set up. These guys are doing great. I mean, once the, you know, the show's run, I can relax. I'm going back to my hotel to check in, and I see this guy. And here is an interesting place to walk through the streets, man, because I must have got panhandled every 5 feet. In fact, it was great. And this is an aside, but there was a guy that stopped me yesterday twice because he had walked down a corner and he came back and forgot he had hit me up. And so I said, hey, dude. You know, I'd help you out, but I just get this other guy down in the other corner, 50 cents. And he looks at me and goes, oh, man. Oh, that's you. That's you. Yeah, man. Yeah. I said, how about you stay at one corner? And then he'll, you know. So he said, this is great. But this guy was walking towards me, was starting to walk a little bit faster, and I've gotten pretty good about it. Just like, you know, come on, I'm just going to walk on the other side of the street now. Just get away, you know. Because, I mean, some people are strange. but this guy, he immediately says, hey, Reverend Greg. That's a nickname. You know, Reverend Greg, thank you so much for making this town have some fucking life. Yeah, thank you for everything you're doing. Thank you. And this is the crazy part. So he follows me into Samir's Market, which is a cool place to hang out if you're a sociologist. What do you call those people?
Anthropologist.
Yeah, anthropologist. I don't know that word I use. Anyway, we'll leave that one cut out of the interview. So John Walkowitz is not awake yet. So,
well, no, there's a division of anthropology.
I realize this. But that wasn't where I was going with that. But it would maybe conjure up some interesting images. So anyway, I walk in, and this guy follows me in. And he is amazing because this is what floors me. He says, dude, I used to see your bands play. And he started naming the names of everyone that was in my band. So I used to work with PJ Askey, and then I see Mike Graham all the time, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they're still around and playing music and stuff. And then I used to go to your video store, and then I see you, and he listed every. And I'm looking at this guy, I'm like, oh my God. I mean, it looks good. I mean, it's good. I said, and the fact that he wasn't all like just crazy, I mean, he really was excited that we were doing something in his town. Yeah, and he got it. And he said, you know, I really hope more people follow this and that you guys can help, you know, spring things into being. And you know, it wasn't until I got back to the hotel I realized, like, wow, you know, sometimes it's such a blur that you can't remember who you've met, who you've worked with, what you've done. And I'm sitting here with John Walkowitz right now. We have another film festival we're going to jump right into next week called the Flagship City International, which is coming in May of 2014.
Right, yeah.
And that's, you know, dramas, comedies, action. I mean, we're really getting into the whole film thing now. Mm-hmm. The Film Society of Northwest Pennsylvania, I founded, and it's now got its own individual life, and they're doing their thing. You know, Spirit Quest Film Festival, we do it at the university. It doesn't get a whole lot of crowd, but we don't really want a lot. I mean, it's not that I don't want a crowd. It's the fact that, you know, that's a grassroots thing. It's really sort of special, spiritual-based thing. A friend of mine started a Christian film festival. I mean, so it's weird where the tentacles go. I mean, somebody here at a horror fest, like, wait a minute, you're helping somebody with a Christian? Yeah, absolutely. You're helping somebody with a... Because I know it's good for those diversities you brought up.
Right.
Where Erie has so much diversity. I mean, I would love, and I hope someone doesn't go and steal this, because every time I'm an Erie reader, there seems to be one guy that just loves ripping off all my ideas. So for you, man, go ahead and try this one. You have no money. But I would love to do a punk rock symposium sometime. time. And they actually go out and reach out for Johnny Rotten. All the people from the 70s to the 80s period, like 77 to 80, and that's one thing I've always wanted to do, is to go back and, you know, Iggy Pop,
maybe,
all these people.
Maybe you can convince, like, the city council to put some money towards that instead of getting What's-His-Face for every Bret Michaels or whatever. maybe we can move that way from the Roar on the Shore or something.
It's funny you just mentioned that, too. I honestly got to tell you, we are really close with Mayor Joe and the people in the city council up there have been wonderful to us. I mean, I've never felt more welcome by people, and I'm not a Democrat, and I love Joe. I love all, and most of the people up there are Democrats. So no, I'm not just a Democrat. I'm saying simply that.
What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say I'm not a Republican either. I think I should be more towards an anarchist, which is smart kids do that. But just be a nice, polite one. Now, I'm a libertarian, which is close.
And
I think everything we do is very libertarian based. It's almost like, you know, just, you know, work together, be inclusive, not exclusive. I mean, and so what I'm seeing with this diversity, getting back to all that, is a very exciting time for Erie. And we have a young man that's out in our hallway right now that gave me a script last year, who's now trying to get, you know, some people hired on as talent for a film he wants to make, which I can't go into too much, even though there's a podcast that sort of scooped it. But, you know, I just had a chance to talk to the mayor yesterday about this, and he was very excited about bringing film to Erie and actually, right. You know, but we have to work with all these different groups, and those groups have to work with us, and that's the only way we're going to have this done. And, you know, it's the same with your, you know, your newspaper. I read the Erie Times, but I also read the Erie Reader. You know, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, all these different publications are out there now, and it's funny because, you know, Erie Reader's getting so much good stuff. Last night, I don't know how many people told me, it's like, this is a very well-written. I said, dude, I gotta tell you, that is the best newspaper I've ever seen here. So that's the truth. That's the truth.
We'll pass it up to the
pass it up the food chain. Right?
Because when I get interviewed, I don't know if it's because you guys are taping, but yeah. I mean, you quote me correctly. The articles are in depth.
Things you would hope.
That's what I'm saying. And of course, you see what they put in the thing. It's like, we're bringing this culture to Erie if they don't want it. I'm like, now I gotta make the t-shirt. Because the Erie Reader is gonna be out there. Yeah. And before somebody else steals it.
Yeah, that's right.
So there are people in Erie too that have no original ideas, nothing. They just.
There's always a lot of people that feel like they're just trying to, that they think what they perceive for value is they're just out to try and make their own money, their own, like, sure. Their own little pile. But the thing
and
is,
God bless them.
And yeah, but the thing is, like, I would say with the Horror Fest and even with the readers, it's more about changing the culture. It's not only just about making money, but also bringing a positive cultural change as part of it. And I think those are the things that are, feel like that's the things I want to get behind. That's the thing I think everyone around here wants to get behind, you know? Yeah.
Well, keep in mind something, and from my perspective, being the oldest guy here, you know, I honestly sat there last night, walked in, and, you know, and it's our 10th anniversary, so people keep saying, you know, 10 years, Dan, what are you going to do 10 more years? I'm like, 10 more years, I'm going to be 60 years old. 20 years, I'm going to be 70 years old. And I said, I don't think I'm going to walk in with a walker someday. So, you know, it's really interesting, and John's here, I mean, and I think we're trying to do something that I don't hear a lot of those diverse groups, those people trying to make that money, which, again, I'm all about that.
Right.
But don't do it off the back of people. Don't take people's ideas and stuff. That seems to be really a problem sometimes in every city. I don't think it's just Erie, it's every place. But, you know, these are things we started that will live on long after I'm gone. You know, I mean, Horror Fest right now, if I died, we'd probably just cease to exist. You know, but John's got enough knowledge now that he could run with it. Sherry, some other people that work with us. So with this new festival, we actually went to get the mayor's blessing, John and I, and it was great being able to at least get some kind of acknowledgement of, like, you know, we want to start this from the ground up, where this one started as a family-run film festival. And you know, I really want this to be something where we can make a template right from the get-go, so Erie can have a film festival forever.
Right.
You know, and then I hope, you know, if anything, some people can take a step back. I don't care if you hate me. I don't care if you love me, because I really don't give a shit. You know? I'm not here to make friends. I'm not here, and I'm not an ass. I don't try to be. And if I rub somebody the wrong way, I apologize. But that's the only way you can do this. You got to stay true to your vision. Passionate people often get mistaken for being uptight, blah, blah. But I'm going to go back to that inclusive and not exclusive. I hope people look at that as an example of, like, we want you to be part of this. Everyone. Right. You know, from the pizza shop down the road that could help us do advertising all the way up to, the big things, the city, the state, the federal government, whatever. If you got some money, throw it over. Take it up for me.
Did I say libertarian? What?
But you know, I hope Erie goes that way, takes that diversity, and really gets together and almost like a puzzle piece and make this beautiful picture for all of us, because we could all win in this. I mean, this is a really exciting time, and a lot of these celebrities that come here every year, they go around Erie, and I just talked to John Carl Beekler, who's the director of effects guy, and he just laid on me that there's several things he has in production that he's filming somewhere else, but now he knows about the Pennsylvania tax incentives. We had a talk. We're having dinner tonight.
Right. Well, I mean, so, it's like the other day when you were talking, you mentioned about the road when the road people came here and they shot.
I mean, location's got to be.
Actually, after we talked about that, I actually went and watched the road. That last scene when they're on the beach is like that's Presque Isle.
And it's a spot that we help the location scout for them because and God bless these people too. You have film people coming in here that. You have a city that just doesn't understand how films are made, which is okay. They're an industrial, blue-collar town. Why should they? I mean, that's what they waste their time with. I agree from the get-go.
But the potential, man.
But when they came here, they took them around and said, well, who are we going to call? I'm not going to say who they called, but you call the typical chain of command. And they had trips to Perry Monument, to the casino. So they would give them the tour that you would get
if you were in a factory. If you're trying to sell it to
VIP.
Sell it to your CEOs or sell it to your management.
And I can't fault them for that.
Right.
It's just the fact that that's what they knew.
Right.
So eventually I get this phone call from somebody from that production company who sounded very irritated, that they weren't getting really what they wanted. And I think when you go to a place that's trying to show you how wonderful a place is, and you say, we have a post-apocalyptic, depressing-ass movie, and we know that Erie looks like a post-apocalyptic
There are definitely parts of 12th.
Bray Street,
Lower East Side, very easily.
Wall Street's one of my favorites. But, don't put this in the article. God, definitely some bullets. Anyway, but, it is really amazing that so much is coming together. Mm-hmm. And it's really amazing to me to see so much excitement, even from people on the street like that guy, who are actually finally appreciating it, and I think they're excited because they know something else is going to happen.
Right, yeah.
So all these other groups out there, all the other film groups in the area, we are super cool with them, And I think there's times where people think there's animosity and stuff. I'm just like, I'm willing to work with anybody who's willing to work with us, and we're willing to work with them, and we could get this unbelievable opportunity right now to really bring some major film work, which means major jobs, employment. I mean, we're an economically depressed place. I mean, the world is right now. But I'm saying this would influence, affect everyone from carpenters to, caterers to electricians. We've talked about this several times about how much this could help our community. That's why I want to do that.
And people
call me crazy.
Crazy?
If the movie becomes popular enough, sometimes fans will actually go and check out the locations that they were filmed at.
Absolutely.
So that brings in the actual tourism.
Especially if Erie wants to really bank on the whole tourism thing, I mean, look at Salem, Look at Salem. That is a city that is supported.
The abandoned factory.
That'd
be cool. I'd love to go check out the one on that.
Have you
a coven would take up one of these old factories.
Well, that was the thing. I remember back in high school that a bunch of people were a Kohler building was still up, and there were squatters in there, and a bunch of teenagers from the high school would go in there, take pictures, and document it.
Edinburgh had it. Reader Hall was in Edinburgh. That was. I remember when we were younger, I didn't break into it. I remember looking through the windows because older, long-haired types would tell me stories, I remember there was an upside-down pentagram on the wall and some bones and stuff. Like, wow. And everybody's like, oh, there's a satanic cult in the basement. Sweet. But it was pretty crazy, But, you get those stories. It's interesting. I don't know. I'm just excited about the future. What about you, John? I just rambled. I have no idea what I said for the last 20 minutes.
Well, that's okay. You did brilliant. Do you have any questions?
Just get me sleepy. That's like I need to do.
If you guys want to talk about
more. Anything you guys want to talk about. But I'm curious, what is it about horror films that attracts you guys? And what is a horror film? What's from shooting thriller, horror, and suspense? Does it matter?
To me, it's whatever scares me. or tries to, anyways. Because anymore, they don't often. And part of it is because I think too many people think they can make a horror movie, and you can't make one well.
Yeah,
anyone can make a horror movie, but make one well. Right. And because I think they kind of mistreat horror a lot in the film industry, because it's like, oh, it's just a horror movie. Well, just crank something out, and there's very few that actually have made me jump or have, over the years. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. Exorcist 3, I think, was one of the last movies that I actually jumped when a nurse gets killed. Yeah, that's funny because I went and saw that at the theater. Me and all my friends jumped. Then I took my girlfriend, I started dating a few months later, to it when it came to Edinburgh. She jumps out of her chair. Then, since I worked at the theater, I would sneak into the back of the movie theater like 2 minutes before that scene when the whole sequence would happen, and I just watch everybody in the place jump. And there's very few movies like that. But growing up, like Greg was talking about earlier, being a monster kid, it's like, I think it's part of it's because my birthday is 2 days before Halloween. So that whole culture around Halloween.
Predestined.
Right. Yeah. So that whole culture, it's like it's, your birthday, you dress up. Like I used to do makeup, like my dad maybe up as a werewolf the 1 year and stuff like that. So I started to get into it. Of course, I was, like I think I told these guys, I was always the one that begged my parents to take me to a haunted house and get there and be too scared to go in. And I was that way until like 2 years ago. But, I started embracing horror more, and I think it's interesting because, like we talked before about how they say horror often will reflect culture.
Yeah.
And if you look at our submissions, well, one of the big genres or subgenres would be zombie movies, and that's because zombies are very popular for some reason. And the other one, what's kind of weird, is all the beast movies that were entered in. We showed a couple this weekend. So I don't know what's going on in society that there's all those movies about abuse, like I mentioned on with some other guys. It's like two or 3 days after we still had on the news those girls in Cleveland being rescued because they're being held hostage by this guy for a number of years. I sat down to watch a movie that played last night. We showed A Measure of Sin, I believe it's called, and the movie was about three women being held hostage by some guy. Yeah, and so there's something going on all across the world. It's not just America, but stuff like that all over. And then the third biggest one has been purgatory films. And I guess our one judge, Larry, saw the credits that there was church sponsored. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned before, Christian horror's kind of making a comeback. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
7 o'clock ones, like Greg has mentioned before, Rosemary's Baby, and Exorcist are religious films.
And that seems to be really interesting to me because I noticed that in my own top 10, a lot of runs through that. Your question is my favorite question people ask me all the time, because ultimately it has to get down to why horror movies, And this one I give you a pretty quick one because I used to lecture on this, which I'd like to get back to doing. When we used to do, there was a gentleman named Roger Solberg, who's a professor at EUP, big horror movie nut, classic movie nut, and he used to come rent movies from my video store, and we both started doing these lectures, which I do miss, about the top 100 horror movies, or blah, blah, and inadvertently at the end of the conversations that we had, somebody would raise their hand and be like, what is a horror movie? What defines horror? And that's sort of what you're asking.
Yeah.
And then also I heard in your question, why horror movies? Why did why did we get into it versus, what makes a horror movie and blah, blah. So, at the end of that, I said, I just watched Deliverance the other night. And I told this group. And I love Deliverance. I think it's a great movie. And I said, quite frankly, it's pretty horrifying. I said, but is it a horror movie? And, of course, I didn't answer that question myself. Is Easy Rider a horror movie?
Right.
In a weird way. The Fear of the South. And Deliverance would fit in that as well. As a matter of fact, I love Fear of the South movies. I mean, anything that's got somebody with long hair going down south in the 60s or something, it seems to be on my list. Is Apocalypse Now, which is my favorite movie, by the way, reader. Apocalypse Now, is that a horror movie? And I would say most certainly. I think Francis Ford Coppola really took Heart of Darkness and made it into a horror movie set in Vietnam. To drive it home, the horror. You got that whole thing. So I think horror is best when it's not put in a box, or in this case, a casket. Right. So there's, but when I was a kid, and this is going to floor you, because again, this is weird. I just had these same conversations. It was a young man, the same person that stopped me. And it was really interesting because I said, ultimately, every kid that got into horror movies, and I've yet to know, I'm talking about obsessed with horror, I've yet to find this not to be true, were completely misfits. They were all misfits. In their own weird way. I'm not saying they were, street kids or anything, but I mean, there was something that they, especially my generation, that they, really understood Frankenstein's monster. He was an awkward teenager, The Wolfman was a guy who suddenly sprouted hair at night,
And, you know, there's all kinds of pubescent things going on. There's all, so, I mean, I think when the classic horror movies, which is what I was raised upon, first hit me, I think I really related with some of these sympathetic monsters. That's one thing I don't like about today's horror movies, is you're rooting for the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, now someone gets their head split up with an axe. And I mean, I love the effects, but I sit here and think, I don't relate with this person, and I don't want somebody to relate with that person. You know? So, but the best horror, like John just said, reflects the cultures they were made in. And the most obvious is the 50s Cold War era movies.
Right.
And one of my favorite movies of all time is Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you watch that movie now, and it's, you know, some people just watch it, like, ah, it's sort of corny. I'm like, but when you really realize what this damn thing is really about, it's complete genius, and it's the ultimate paranoia movie. That movie today could be replayed, and you can say, this is the fear of the Taliban living next door to you. This is the fear. It could be one of them.
Yeah.
It could be one of them. You know? It's unbelievable. They're here. They're everywhere. And in the best symbolic part, don't go to sleep. As long as you don't go to sleep.
Yeah.
And you're vigil, you won't get taken over by them. And so that is the best horror. Oddly enough, I'm a very spiritual person. I really am a reverend, by the way. A lot of people don't understand. I'm like, I really am an ordained minister. But probably a little bit more of a liberal cloth. Oh. But
is a crucifixion a horror story?
Yeah, actually, the Bible is full of horror. Absolutely. No, it's a true story. People ask me that. So I've been called to my face a Satanist. I've been called, I'm talking about from Christians. This is great. You know, I saw a woman outside the other day, so you're going to hell. I'm like, all right, that's cool. And it's really weird because then I have people, you know, I actually have time to put posts up. So I'm a Christian. I can't put that. I'm like, that's really weird. I'm a Christian too. That's pretty cool. You're like, why wouldn't you put my poster up?
Yeah.
It's got a skull. I'm like, I look at it. Is there something I don't know about you, ma'am?
Yeah.
You don't know. I don't have a skull. But the because of those themes running through some of those great horror movies, almost all horror movies are religious little tales. Which I and then once I tell these people, they're like, wow, it's a Frankenstein. Is a should man, you know, man versus, you know, science, man trying to be God,
right.
Dracula, the, you know, and zombies, the living dead. Oh my God, well, you're supposed to be in heaven hanging out with grandpa.
Right.
You know, here you are eating people's brains. You know, okay. You know, we got to drive a stake through your eye. I mean, these are really primal, you know, crazy, the wolfman animals, you know, just complete lustful, just having to go out and, you know, and you got to kill the person you love, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, all those things are great, but by the time I got to Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist, those movies really hit me. Because I really thought that they hit on the best of the horror stuff, which is questioning your morality, your mortality, and I don't care if you're an atheist, I'm totally cool with that. I'm saying, but you know, this question of faith, you know, and really The Exorcist, which was completely banned by the Catholic Church, religious people this day, I would never watch that blasphemous movie. I laugh and said, it is the most pro-Christian movie I've ever seen. Because not only, and I'm not spoiling this for anybody, if you haven't seen it, I'm sorry. You know, you got this girl possessed by not just a demon, the devil.
Right.
In the end of the 60s, early 70s, when you have all, everyone thinks all the liberal movements are going on, all the conservative stuff, people bashing their heads in Vietnam's region. I mean, when you set horror in the times they were made, they make a lot more sense.
Right.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre makes sense when it came out.
Yeah.
Night of the Living Dead makes sense when it came out. And all these great movies I love, but Rosemary's Baby in particular, all these things, I mean, you had the Manson family murders, all this stuff. People thought the world was literally going to the devil, you know? And even in the times we live in now, I mean, God, we're sitting right now be wiped out by a bacterium. I mean, it's scary as hell, man. You know, and there's people that really do fly planes and buildings. There's really people out there that, you know. So we're in this new era. When it wouldn't surprise me if an Invasion of the Body Snatchers came out. But Hollywood still throws at us. Exactly. Hollywood throws at us remakes. I don't want a remake of it. I'm saying, where's that new, you know. So at the film festival, we see those reflections. Hollywood is still about 20 years behind thinking what we want to see is tits, which is, God bless them.
Yeah.
You know, axe murders, slasher stuff, you know, people in a camp, dead teenagers. And, you know, they say, well, they make money. I'm like, they make money because you're giving no one choices.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's a movie called Paper Dolls that was here a few years ago. Finally got a distribution deal. And that was one of my goals at the Horror Fest. And it's a solidly scary movie.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie. You can relate with the characters and stuff. But ultimately, you know, what defines horror is really what John says. It's what scares you. What does it do within you that elicits the same thing a comedy would? Did I laugh at this movie? It's a good comedy movie. Did I get scared?
Right.
And Do horror movies really scare people? That's been I don't know if I've ever right. really. I guess I shouldn't say that. I've definitely been scared at some things, but not to the point where I forgot I was watching a movie.
Right.
Yeah, you
right.
know. So it's more of that funhouse deal.
Yeah. yeah. I think you touched on something that a lot of non-horror fans don't realize. Because, like, even my boss, I mentioned that I was coming here this weekend. And he's like, oh, well, what goes on there? I'm like, well, it's, essentially, it's
we
just
kill
like,
lambs.
Yeah. Essentially, it's scary movies. He said, ooh, like what?
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh,
like, yeah, yeah.
But,
like, if I go there, I'll be stained.
Yeah, from like a horror film viewer's perspective, horror is very diverse. You've got the films that are more cerebral beyond what is on the surface, like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But then you have other films that are more, well, like they're played for laughs, just like comedy worked in. Then you have, of course, movies that are so bad they're good. But I think there are a lot of reasons to like horror, and for any one of those, depending on what you're watching, that non-horror fans don't pick up on.
Right.
Because they haven't given it a chance.
I agree.
They don't understand how much fun or how interesting, mm-hmm. how thought-provoking, how wild some of these can be.
Yeah.
Right. Because they have a lot of merit regardless how they seem.
Yeah, sure. I'd like to bring up a specific example, because I was here last night, and I was only to hang out for a little bit, but I got to catch Cold Turkey.
Oh, yeah.
And that's terrific, because it's about, is that from the Netherlands, or where is that?
I think so,
Iceland.
Yeah.
Iceland, right, it's about a cannibal. He lives in a small town, and he's like, you know, the movie starts where he's like chloroforming a guy, and then sawing him up and eating him over the course of a week. They don't really show it all, but anyhow, he basically cuts them saying, like, you know, like, I basically, like, one human life can support me for, I think, like, a week. Like, oh, that's a week's worth of food for me to eat. And he's like, I've done the math. I'll eat the whole village before I'm 60.
Yeah. Right?
So yeah. I can't, like, this can't go on. Like, I have
so
to.
So this really perverted logic going on.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So it's,
a
you know.
Scholarly cannibal.
Right, exactly. So he realizes he has to stop. And so then the movie starts up and shows a calendar. He's like, all right, day one, going cold turkey. And it's about him, like, going through it. And it's just, you know, it's his body's kind of, like, you know, decomposing because he can't eat anything. He can't hold anything down. He's emaciated. And it's really interesting to watch, you know, and, you know, my wife and I are watching this, and I don't like, I'm not a big horror film guy, you know, but I do like ones that I like films that pose these questions,
absolutely.
You know, like,
absolutely.
This is a problem, how does this character exactly. solve this problem?
Right.
And it was
so
just,
somebody actually had a script.
Someone took a scenario,
absolutely.
Put
right.
characters in there, and then wrote
and
dialogue.
How would this work?
Right,
yeah.
exactly. And those are the types of films I like the most, and the thing is that
I agree with you.
That doesn't have to exist only in horror, but the horror, when you add this element, it makes it more extraordinary.
Right, right.
Which
I think makes it even a little bit more creepy,
right.
because I think when you can do a legitimate horror film,
right.
and have those solid things there, where you know, because you're expecting the bloodbath, you're expecting the dead teenagers, but when it gets out of that formula,
yeah.
right.
and all of a sudden you have that intellect going to, you know, people
right.
come on and they're like, wow, that was really, like, and you get that funhouse effect.
Right, and there's,
yes.
There's this really tense scene where she's in the classroom, and this girl turns around, and she's like, hey, it's your birthday, I made you a chocolate cake, and that's the tense scene, because
exactly.
he can't eat, he doesn't want to eat
yeah.
in front of her,
yeah.
because he knows when he eats, he's going to vomit. And
exactly.
he might know that something's wrong with him.
Yeah,
he doesn't right. want anyone to know that he's a cannibal.
Yeah.
That's funny.
There's a scene in The Exorcist. You guys all seen The Exorcist?
I have never seen pea soup.
You should see it. Well, no. Hear what he said? Pea soup, head spin around,
yeah.
all stuff.
Yeah,
that's what people bring up. But when I don't know if anybody had a chance to see it. They actually restored the movie and put it in the theaters for a little bit a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I think they re-released it last year, too, which I missed. But this is the cool thing. If you ever get a chance to see The Exorcist in an actual surround sound, you know, say a theater,
yeah.
do it. Because the sound in that show is so incredibly creepy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is true, but I have read on the internet that there's very good basis for this. They contacted the CIA. Have you ever heard about this?
You told me.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing.
I was just telling somebody else
yeah.
about that the other day.
And supposedly, the filmmakers denied it, and it could be a little myth. But, I mean, there's a lot of people involved in that movie that said it was true, so I don't know. So the soundtrack, they actually wanted to see what would disturb people, what frequencies would, you know, affect people. And there's a lot of subliminals. I think it might have been, I could be wrong on this too, I think it might have been the last Hollywood movie that really was allowed to put subliminals. And some are blatant now. You can freeze frame and stuff. But there was words like the word blood pig would show up. There's that face. That, you know,
yeah, face.
Eileen Beast is a woman who's actually that face. I should admit that. It's weird. You know, it's like people admit. But it's really interesting because in The Exorcist, even though people remember the pea soup and the head spinning around and in a pretty vulgar language,
yeah,
stuff,
in your face.
But there's a scene when the guy takes, I think the priest takes this tape of the recorded voice of the little girl,
yeah.
and plays it backwards, and, start, and suddenly he starts realizing this is the voices going backwards, and there are multiple voices, which is creepy to begin with.
Right.
But he's in this, and you imagine yourself in this. This is what the best horror movies do. You are now that guy.
Right.
And now you're in, all you hear is the fluorescent tubes of the place. It's like 3 in the morning. He's playing his tape over again, and all you hear is that tape recorder, click, click, back, click, click, back, totally quiet. And I swear to God, one of the scariest scenes in all of horror history. There's a phone in that, and I don't know if he's in a morgue, I don't think he's morgue, but it's some kind of office, and there's a phone sitting there, the camera pans past it, and also that damn phone rings, and the sound in the theater is mixed so loud that the phone, and everyone was just like, Jesus! and then we all started laughing, because we're like, a phone ring. It just made us all jump out of our seats. Yeah. And I even knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are those brilliant moments.
Right.
That Steven Spielberg, one of the best Jaws movies, you know, the movie Jaws, there's a movie where you don't even see the goddamn monster at all. And people to this day will tell me, oh, look, the shark's in the whole thing. I'm like, the shark is barely in it for many reasons. I mean, the story of Jaws, we wouldn't have time to, but read about it. But it's a fascinating how that happened. That could have been the worst movie, could have killed Steven Spielberg's career. But the fact that two notes, you know some shit's coming down. You know, get out of the water, guys. Get out of the water, you're going to get chomped, you know. Well, so the horror is not when the kid gets chomped. The horror is just knowing that we've all had our feet in the water.
Right.
And we're all like, ooh. A scene in Jackass. Somebody said, you ever turn away from a screen? I said, the only time I've ever turned away from a screen is a comedy movie. And that was when Jackass was doing the paper cuts across their mouths.
Oh, God. Oh.
Yeah, so I was like, you know, so is that a horror movie? That's what I mean. Somebody asked me. I would say Jackass is definitely, you know, a man pissed in a snow cone ate it. Yes, absolutely horrifying. Yeah. But I love Jackass. I'm sorry.
Well, Greg, I know you're running out of time, but I would like to ask just like with real quick, with this horror fest, I mean, I know you guys had to run a Kickstarter, and you guys, it's ongoing now, but like has this been a good year for the horror fest?
Yeah, I think we had record pre-sales.
Absolutely.
And it's weird. Stuff came together like a couple months ago where Greg's like, geez, you know, we don't have many tables. We probably have, what, 24 maybe?
Yeah.
And then, you know, we had some nice celebrities and stuff. But then all of a sudden, all these celebrities start popping up. And all of a sudden, I think we went from, what, 24 to 60-some vendors' tables.
Never sold out the vending room.
Yeah. We sold probably a couple hundred tickets ahead of time.
Easily. And we're not a very big pre-sale thing. We don't really push them that much.
Right.
And because we have 2,000 seats in the theater, we don't ever really worry. Now, for Rob Zombie or somebody show, we probably have to start. Okay, we don't have so many.
Right.
You know, but, and that's on my radar. I hope someday it happens, but we'll see. But if, you know, if it's, like he just said, I mean, before, if we sold 100 pre-sale passes, I'd be happy. Those are the hardcore fans, you know.
Right.
So we never really get prepared for it too much. We're like, oh, the day before, we'll go get the passes put up and we'll get the people at the door. We ran out of passes within an hour of the doors opening.
That's
awesome.
Yeah, I think we ran out of a bunch of stuff, too. Like the,
oh, Lord, we never ran out of stuff. We've never had that happen. The hotel is sold out. I mean, so this has gotten bigger. I mean,
that's awesome.
And we're not going anywhere. It's definitely, you know, and the only thing I do wish, and no one ever asked us this, like, what could people do to help the Horror Fest and events like ours? Please buy a ticket, even if you don't have a whole lot of money. We're not, we know, dude, you know, people always make me laugh. Well, we don't have any money. I'm like, I have no money. You know, I do not get money. At the end of the year.
I know you.
Yes, exactly. Thank you for letting me borrow all the money. Don't let me down. All right. But honest to God, if people understood that there's no one out there, including John or myself, that's getting paid to do this. I mean, obviously, expenses get paid for and stuff. But I mean, no one's making a living doing this.
All right.
We could make a living doing this. I'm not even sure. I mean, we break even every year. We're happy. We really, truly do this because we love it. Every single floor person out there, the kids we hire, the stuff like that. I was going to say hire. I mean, the kids that come here and on a Saturday and Sunday just for a chance to meet some celebrities and enjoy their genre, will put on a red staff shirt and help us out. We can is a great help to us. I mean,
right.
So volunteer, buy a ticket. If you got a business, buy a $25 ad, for God's sakes. Yeah. I mean, an ad in the paper's going to run you thousands of dollars, maybe. We'll do the same ad for, you know, $100, you know?
Right, right.
So we need sponsors and
anyway, sponsors. Yeah. Something that I don't think we push them enough. And this is something we tried this year, and we got close, but it fell apart. If some of these celebrities, if we get a someone to sponsor coming out,
bring anybody in.
Yeah, some of them will agree to come out to your place of business. We almost had, should I talk about that?
Absolutely.
Danny Glover.
Yeah. Well, and, place, though, but yeah,
Danny Glover, who's going to come to a diner locally, or eatery or something, and what it was is they would have paid for his first class ticket because he was the last minute guest name that popped up. Right. And, you know, we're beyond our bed chute by that point. And so we can't afford a first class ticket. And
understanding, on top of everything else.
Yeah, on top of everything
first
else.
First class ticket, okay, but now you've got to talk about hotel,
yeah, hotel
catering, security.
Yeah, all that stuff.
First class.
Yeah, you know, all our expenses. And he's worth a first class ticket. You know, he's an older guy and a tall guy, so he wants a leg room. Yeah. But if this place would have sponsored him, he would have come out to their place of business, had dinner, and met with people. So
that
people that
have thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
of our guests.
All the media. Yeah. I worked for the media. We would have all been out there covering that.
Right,
so that's something that if you're out there and you're, well, I don't know, what's in it for me?
Right.
Well, you can have something like Danny Glover show up at your place of business.
Exactly. And there's nothing better than a celebrity endorsement of anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, for me, the biggest celebrity endorsement we ever had was when I've worked with Alice Cooper a few times, and it's really funny. He came down one day wearing our Horror Fest t-shirt, doing photo ops. Like, and I'm sitting there with my Horror Fest shirt on, so I got this great picture of me, Alice. It's on my Facebook. Where I'm sitting there, I'm like, and what I read underneath, I said, what the best dressed men this season are wearing. But I mean, to have somebody like Alice Cooper, who used to be on my wall, you know, and I was like, you know, I love Alice Cooper. I was a 10-year-old kid, loved Alice Cooper, you know. And now I can dial up and be like, hey, what's up?
Well, I know you're pressed for time, so yeah, thank you for taking the
time. I gotta go pick up Steve Thomas Howell from the airport.
Tommy.
Tommy Howell. Yeah.